Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Happy New Year, everybody. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Joe Jurevicius here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, our first show of 2015. And as we go on over the next 2 weeks, we're going to start getting into our position reviews. We're going to start with the quarterback position tomorrow, and basically the next 2 weeks we'll have a different position every day that we'll go through. We'll kind of look at those positions in sum. We will kind of tell you this is what we think. We'll give you the contract status of everybody there, what the Browns should do at the end. Do they feel good about that position? Do we not feel good about it? We're going to try to have guests along those lines, either players from the position, coaches from the position, national writers. We'll have our staff writers, Andrew Gribble and Kevin Jones, on as well. So lots of content coming to you the rest of this week, beginning Tuesday with the quarterback position. Also, this week we're going to have the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, live on the show, and the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, Ray Farmer, live on this show. Don't know the days yet, but when we do that, we will have tweet-ups where you can tweet us questions that we will ask to them live on the show. So that's good. But before we get into all that stuff, let me just say, Happy New Year, gentlemen. Good to be back with you here.
Happy New Year, man. Start of a new year here, and obviously, hopefully many more good things, because right now we're not in the playoffs. The Cavaliers don't look very well, and it almost has me thinking, let's go Indians.
Let's go Indians. Well, listen, in Cleveland, it's always, you know, waiting for next year, and, well, next year's here.
It is, and you know, it is a happy new year, and it was great. 2014 was tough for a lot of people, and I think for me, being a part of this show and a part of a step in the right direction for this organization and covering it was a great joy, and why I look forward to a very prosperous 2015.
And the chance that they're playing for a national championship.
Yeah, congratulations. That definitely doesn't suck.
So congratulations.
Yeah, right, congratulations. Let's talk about that game for a little bit here. We're in the offseason. We can do that. We can talk about that game. You and I were texting a little bit during the game. What were you thinking just as that game began and started to unfold? Because it seemed like they couldn't capitalize on their opportunities. They kicked a couple field goals, 21-6. And you're thinking, oh, my goodness, that's when I texted you in the classic reverse jinx. I'm like, good thing you didn't go down there.
That's
trying to work the reverse jinx, man. The kid is huge with the reverse jinx.
He is. And you know what? I got to cover it, you know, on ESPN Cleveland, WKNR, doing the pregame show from 5 to 7 p.m. That Thursday night prior to the game. And it was it was a great joy just to get into the nitty-gritty. All along the way, we were, of course, tuned into the Florida State-Oregon game. And what we just kept saying was Florida State's killing themselves a lot like Brown's season of old, getting down into the red zone, getting down inside the 10 and coming away with just three. And for the set, you know, for the third time, they get two field goals. And then they get, of course, the fourth and one when he reached across, but his knee was considered down. They get 6 points on three trips inside the 10, and the game starts. I'm pumped up. And you know what? I told Greg Brenda, my co-host for the show, that I was nervous for the Wisconsin game and the Big Ten championship game because of everything that Melvin Gordon was and our defense's ability to stop him. But I think because of very similar to the Steelers-Browns record with Ben Roethlisberger, 17-1, now 17-2, but the 0-8 record versus the SEC, I was excited for the opportunity. And I think that, as we know, Urban has done a great job recruiting against Alabama and LSU and Florida State. So I think they deserve to be there from a talent standpoint. There's just been, you know, kind of certain times in the season where I want to close my eyes because I don't know what these coaches were doing, but they got it together, and as you said, Nathan, you know, getting down a few times, big plays, getting inside the 10 and only getting field goals, and I thought we were walking down that same path that Florida State walked down, was, you know, doing enough to get down there and not getting scores, and at 21-6, I'm like, this could get really ugly really fast.
The fact that you're down to a third-string quarterback,
right,
and you can actually carry on as if your starting quarterback has been in there is what's impressive for me. I've been happy, you know, I'm a Big Ten fan. Obviously, during the season, I want everybody that plays Penn State to lose. But come Big Ten season, I like to see all of our Big Ten teams do a good job. And we, for the most part, have done that. I think there's been a couple games, Iowa and Minnesota, I think, were the two that didn't play very well. But Penn State got back in the bowl game. Michigan obviously has some big news with Harbaugh coming to town. And I think that only does wonders for the Big Ten. And again, we showed that we can play versus some of the better teams.
Well, it does. I mean, I was tuned in, and that's what really gave me the reluctance to think that Ohio State could beat Alabama. I picked them to win. I thought they would win, of course, with a slight bit of bias. But there, of course, there's any time you play a school like Alabama, the number one ranked team in the country, there's a little bit of doubt. But when Michigan State, of course, they're not an SEC team, beat Baylor, came back against them. But, Auburn losing and Mississippi State losing and Ole Miss losing, you know, maybe that SEC West wasn't as good as everybody thought. And, you know, of course, Ohio State goes and does their thing and eradicates that SEC jinx that has kind of loomed large over their school.
In my opinion, what stuck out to me watching that game was that in years past, when you had an Ohio State team take on an SEC team, there was a speed differential that typically favored. I thought the Buckeyes were by far the faster team in that game.
I do too, and I think that maybe beyond Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper is a great talent, and I think Ohio State's defense, you could see, wanted to limit him as much as they could and force their other guys to be those playmakers. And I think Bruce Hooley, another guy, WKNR host, has said all season long, Ohio State's just got so many weapons, it's a laundry list, and to your point, I think now, going into next football season, you've got Cardale Jones, you've got JT Barrett, who will be rehabilitated, and Braxton Miller, who will be 100% as well.
So what do you do?
What do you do? I don't think it matters. I think it's the system more so than anything. They're all great players. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. But I think it's a great system, and that's a testament to Tom Herman, who will be leaving us for the University of Houston. But I'm sure Urban Meyer will not skip a beat in finding someone to replace him at his level.
You know, when you talk about the speed, Nate and Matt, the thing that stuck out for me, the reason Ohio State's – what always sticks out for me is Ohio State always has speed. They've always got a guy on the outside that can fly, usually a couple of them. Running back, they got a guy that could either pound it or he could take off, and they've done a really good job. And when you do play the Alabamas, that's the difference maker for Alabamas. Usually they have those guys, and that's what sets them apart from the opponents that they play. But Ohio State, man, I mean, that's what kept them in the game. It's just speed, and I'm looking at those guys in envy going – man, I wish I had an ounce of that when I played, man. That's fast.
Yeah, Devin Smith averages over 30 yards, a touchdown for his career. He had the two catches for 87 yards. You could see that speed on the outside. How about Ezekiel Elliott, though? 20
That's
carries,
who I was gonna. I was gonna ask you.
He looked pretty good.
He looked pretty good, and I just because you of course in both in fantasy football and working here closely with Ray Farmer and his staff here, from a scouting standpoint, to me, and I know the running back position in the NFL is not what it used to be.
No, but
to me,
legit.
He looks like he's legit. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He's a great blocker, and I think he's physically, able to take the pounding that you would have to do in the NFL. And of course, he's got one more season as well.
He's got one more season. One of my friends who's a huge Buckeye fan, said, I wonder if this guy can be better than Carlos Hyde as a prospect coming out.
I think so.
I think so, too.
When you catch the ball out of the backfield, it makes a huge difference at the pro level because now you're not one-dimensional getting the ball and running up the two-hole, the four-hole, whatever it is. But when you can do those things and then catch the ball out of the backfield, it makes your stock go that much higher. And, again, I've seen so many backs come through the NFL that have become one-dimensional, and it's almost like when they do slip through on some type of screen pass or a little dump-off, they've got the stone hands of old.
Like, well, the Big Ten could end up producing quite a few backs. Melvin Gordon's going to be coming out of Wisconsin, the kid from Indiana that everybody
Coleman.
Loves.
Tevin Coleman. Tevon Coleman.
Yeah, everybody loves him. He's considered one of the top guys.
David Cobb, kid out of Minnesota.
Minnesota
ran
Cobb,
for 1,600 yards.
Amir Abdullah at Nebraska.
Yep.
So there are some good running backs in this. And, you look at Le'Veon Bell, and obviously the Steelers missed him in that playoff game, which we'll get to.
Langford at Michigan State is going to be probably a late-round pick, too.
Yeah, so this is good. It's becoming a little bit it's good. And Ezekiel Elliott certainly
back.
Looks right
there.
We are, there.
Finally.
Certainly, listen, you go down and now you have – it's nice to see, though, right? Everybody who doesn't like the SEC to see a Pac-12 Big Ten final is certainly excited about that. Now, Oregon, I was very impressed with.
Yes.
They look fast. They look able to do – and I don't even think that was Mariota's best game.
No, it was not.
When he got going, they can put points up in a hurry.
It's just – to me, the shocking thing, and I said this, it might have been in a break, on that pregame show with Greg Brenda, is – if I were a defensive player in today's college football, I don't know how these defenses get lined up. Because for me, as a middle linebacker, you're taking the call from the sideline, and I know a lot of it's signaled in with everybody looking over, but it was hard enough to get guys to look me in the face, let alone to get everybody when they're tired, to look to the sideline, to get lined up, communicate after a motion or some motion out of the backfield, whatever it might be, who you got, who I got, all those little tangos and all those things that you do from a defensive standpoint. It's Oregon and these schools just and Baylor, I mean, it's like every 7.5, 8 seconds, it's like there is no way I'd be able to get lined up and communicate the way we had to back or way we did back in the day. But I mean,
and
again,
at some point, dude, just stop. I mean, at some point, you have to be gassed.
You have to. You have to.
You're not used to it.
No, not at all.
I've got a question here because we're talking about getting signals from the sideline. What does Ohio State do with the red sleeve, green sleeve? I've noticed that. I have no clue what that means.
Well, what it is basically is there's three-quarter – well, you can only have so many signals similar to like a third base coach or first base coach in baseball. You've only got so many body parts that you can touch without being obscene, you know? So one of – I think every series, one of them is hot. And the other two are not.
Gotcha.
So their signals are all very similar, and some of them are two of them are going through the motion, and one of them is actually giving them the play.
I went to Penn State, Ohio State a couple years ago, and I'm looking, and it was like, what's going on here? Green sleeves, red sleeves, blue sleeves? Who's calling what? Like, I was confused, and I'm like, I played 11 years of pro football.
Can you guys explain those cards to me?
I was just gonna say that with the pictures
and
it's a similar concept. It's so, whatever. Some of them, from a defensive standpoint, they're the personnel group that the offense is in, you know, and in most cases, the coverage.
The ones that have like a picture of like, you know, Beano Cook, and then it's got like an eyeball.
Yeah,
and
or like Daffy Duck or something.
And then Daffy Duck. Like, what is that?
It's.
I mean, I know it's a play call of some kind.
It is a play call of some kind, and basically, whatever cubicle is hot for that series too is the play series that they're going to be in, or like whatever blocking scheme they're going to use for that series.
What about some of the guys in college when you say we're going with the upper right quadrant? They're like, what's that
what
mean?
What the heck does that even mean? Exactly. I'm not here to go to school. Let me ask you this, both of you, because it's an interesting question. With these offenses going as fast as they do in college, do you think it's fair? Is that something that should be limited and regulated?
I'll say yes.
Yes, it's fair, or yes, it should be. They should not be able to go that fast.
Yes. No, it's not fair, and no, they should not be able to go that fast. And again, I'm in a different age. As crazy it is, as young as I am and fresh out of the league as I feel, I college football is in a different phase right now than I played. And One of the schools in the Big Ten, Joe, if you recall, maybe watching it or playing against it, was Northwestern with like Damian Anderson, those guys, and Darnell, you know, Autry.
Yep.
They were the first to start that speed offense and want to get plays and really, you know, gain an extra 10 plays, whatever it was. The schools, if you all notice, they all like on cue, all look over to the like their left or right side, whatever bench they were on. And I hated that because as a player, you're playing the players. And when you have that type of coaching, when you get lined up, it's like not only are you playing the players, but you're playing the coaches. Because the coaches from the press box, you know, say something down to the sideline coaches then put them in the proper play in the set that we were in. So it's like, and it becomes a true chess match where it's like, you don't want to show something too soon because then you're going to see it and you got to move late. And then if you're out of position, they take advantage of it. And it's like, I just hated the fact that it's like, you can't line up across from us and beat us, that you need to communicate with your coaches every single freaking play.
You're allowed to have coaches.
Sure you are.
I don't have a problem with it, but what I do think it does actually is I think these guys in college, I think it becomes a watered down version of football. It's not that they don't know where they're going, but when it comes to the translation into the pro
to
league,
Tony Manziel,
right?
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Well, exactly. There's no question. But when you sit there and think about it, are you really learning how to dissect the defense? Are you just going out there running plays because you're not really learning those subtle things, those tendencies that a defense might do that might make you want to change the play for a particular reason? So I think when stuff comes out there and the bullets are flying and coaches are calling it, you're just going on memory of what you've been taught in your meetings. This is the play. This is how we run it. And there's no rhyme or reason as to why you run it other than it was called from the box
above. Right, you want to understand it. And that's why I think it'll be interesting to see in terms of recruiting for Michigan when you have a Harbaugh who's coached in the NFL and is going to run a pro-style offense, if that appeals more to people who want to make a smoother transition in the NFL.
I think it does. And again, just to reference some of the other co-hosts and the shows that I listen to, Bruce Hooley did a great kind of like walkthrough on Jim Harbaugh being hired. And what would a recruiting talk to a prospective quarterback coming, wanting,
no,
you know,
question,
maybe weighing Ohio State, maybe weighing Oregon, but also too wanting to weigh in Michigan. And I think for Jim Harbaugh, you can talk about, you know, what he did with Alex Smith, who was a struggling quarterback in the National Football League in San Francisco, and, you know, mind him getting a concussion, he probably would still be the starter with Colin Kaepernick as a backup. And then also too is, do you want to be the next Andrew Luck? You know, that's what he should say, because I'm going to put you.
I do.
right?
Sign me up.
Yeah, with that second contract
we
coming in a year
a
or two. But I'm just saying is he's going to go out and he's going to go get dominant runners. He's going to go get big, physical offensive linemen. And again, if you look at the last 5 years in the National Football League, about one or two Stanford offensive or defensive linemen go in the first, second, or third round, like every single year. And those are all essentially Harbaugh guys that he recruited when he was at Stanford. Just because that physical type of play, that pro style, it transfers so well into the NFL that guys are going to want to play in that because they feel like they're going to be ahead of that curve in getting drafted into the NFL.
Would you want to play in a Chip Kelly type offense? I mean, it's the same type of deal where, I mean, it's full speed. And I have a hard time believing that the size that I am or the size that the offensive linemen were, how you could go that fast at that pace, even during the week, during practice. It's not only the game.
Because you have
when
to,
you gotta,
right.
You got to condition yourself. I know that I'd be tapped out almost before
for sure.
Sunday. I'd have double hamstring pulled both Achilles, and my eyeballs would be out of my head just because I can't keep up. And, I mean, that's an interesting thing, and
it
I don't
is.
Know if it's going to last that long in the National Football League. I see changes coming, but the thing is, when you do talk about the Harbaughs and what he's been able to do, and this is going back to the college thing, I really like seeing football for what it was. I mean, I understand everybody likes to see the points and all that, but I think there's something special when you can see an Andrew Luck or a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady drop back, dissect, change the play at the line of scrimmage for the right reasons because he knows every nuance.
Tony Romo in last night's game. You know, how many times did he walk up to the line, you know, and just wait for them to show him one tell?
Right.
And then he just, you know, he talked to the line, he turned it one way or the other, and he'd obviously audible the route as well.
He did a lot of killing yesterday. Kill.
Yeah.
Plays changed, and he went out, and he finally looks like he got the monkey off his back.
It was, and it was great to see. And we're going to get into all of those playoff games here throughout the show. 216-578-0850, the way they get on board. We're going to talk football. A lot of interesting stuff around the NFL this past week and over the weekend. Speaking of Chip Kelly, made a nice power play in Philadelphia that
Control.
Seemed to work out pretty well for him. So we'll talk about that. The four wild card round games and something that we're seeing, some organizational thoughts as well here when Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, returns.